Welcome to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Thanks for allowing us to share this time with you. Honestly, it's our favorite time of the day where we get to hang out together and talk about how the truth of God's Word can make a huge difference in your life. And that's what we're going to hear from Richard in a way that only he can do, with words of hope, insight, and humor. You may be stuck in traffic or stuck in life. Either way, today's message is going to help get you on the right track as you learn how much God loves you right where you are. So let's get right into today's talk. Here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Moxie. Does anybody know what moxie is? I grew up, my mom using the word moxie, and I kind of figured out what it was by the context in which she used it. There's a bunch of definitions, but the ones that apply to what we're going to talk about today, the ability to face difficulty with spirit and courage, and another definition for it is fortitude and determination. Let me read you a few quotes here I found. One by Douglas MacArthur. He said, "Age wrinkles the body, quitting wrinkles the soul." Calvin Coolidge said, "Nothing in this world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful people with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. The slogan, 'Press on,' has solved and always will solve the problems of the human race." Robert Frost said, "In three words, I can sum up everything I've learned about life. It goes on." Tom Hopkins said, "I am not judged by the number of times I fail, but by the number of times I succeed. And the number of times I succeed is in direct proportion to the number of times I fail and keep trying." Napoleon Bonaparte said, "Victory belongs to the most persevering." Henry Ward Beecher said, "The difference between perseverance and obstinance is that one often comes from a strong will and the other from a strong won't." Oliver Goldsmith said, "Success consists of getting up just one more time than you fall." I'm going to read you something out of James, and then I'll jump to another passage, just a couple of places here today, though. James chapter 5, verse 7 and following. And this is written to believers. "Therefore, be patient, brethren." And whenever you see the brethren in the scripture, it means he's writing to Christians. "Therefore, be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, waiting patiently for it until it receives the early and latter rain. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand." Now, to the people that was written to, they were patient, and the Lord never showed up. But he said to them, "The coming of the Lord is at hand." Now, the Lord came. He just came after them, and they were gone. He didn't come to stay in what we call the second coming. It wasn't that. But they were out of here, and he tells them to be patient. And I think, obviously, I mean, people talk about this all the time. We're in a microwave society, and I want it now. I want it fast. If you ask my girls about me and driving, I mean, I'm doing some talking to the people in front of me usually. I mean, and they kind of laugh and like, you know, "Daddy, he can't hear you." And, you know, "All right, people, let's go. Let's go." You know, I'm looking at a stoplight, and I can tell if you drive downtown, especially where there are walk and don't walk signs. I can not only track the yellow light turning, going the other direction and tell you about when it's about to go green and we need to be moving this. I can tell you by the flashing do not walk signs, because when they start flashing, that means that light's about to turn. And the second that flashing starts, the yellows start to go on the other side, that light's going green, I want the person in front of me on their accelerator ready to move. Don't be sitting there talking on the phone, finishing up, you know, your eyelashes or whatever you're doing. Get out of my way. I got somewhere to go. So I'm not the most patient driver. I think I am, but I know I'm really not. We want it now. We got to go. And in an agrarian society, and some of y'all maybe grown up out on the farm, how many of y'all grew up in a rural area? Anybody that grows up in a rural area, the pace is different. My wife grew up in a little town in Texas with 700 people. I mean, the pace will make you crazy. I mean, they're not going anywhere. They're not doing anything. They're watching corn grow, you know. And I'm like, okay, we got to do something. We just can't sit here. And it takes me a certain amount of time when I get out there just for my RPMs to come down enough to keep up with those people. Because they're not in a hurry. They're driving, you know, you go down the little back farm to market roads and, you know, it's a little pickup and a guy driving a pickup. He can't be going 30 and it probably won't go more than 35. There's a governor on it or something. You're like, move. And if I sped up and went around him, wherever I'm going, I don't have anything to do when I get there anyway. So why am I in a hurry to get somewhere and do nothing? But we are moving, we're going. And the idea of being patient and what he writes to them about something they're familiar with, he says, see how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, waiting patiently for it until it receives the early and latter rain. It's a long process. We say, okay, God, I get the prayer thing. I'm going to pray today, tomorrow. That's it, tomorrow, right? This is going to happen tomorrow. And then tomorrow comes and it doesn't happen. And these people are written to, and they're told to wait patiently like a farmer waits. They say, okay, and they wait and they die, and he never shows up. Now, they saw him. They waited patiently, and they did see Jesus. One of the reasons the Bible is so powerful is this stuff doesn't apply just to the people it was written to. It applies to anybody. And you're going to have to be patient. You're going to have to give it a long time sometimes and hang in there until it comes to pass. And it is very easy to give up. And I know there are situations in here you say, you know what, you're talking about being patient. You don't know anything about it. I got a sick mom, a sick dad, a sick husband, a sick wife. I'm sick. There's an individual in here who's come up to me and, you know, got some pretty intense stuff going on in their family and in their home. You say, well, be patient. It's not that easy. But what else are you going to do? You've got to wait on him because there's nothing else going to fix it. But the longevity of this, the category he gives them is see how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, waiting patiently for it until it receives the early and the latter rain. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Now, I've talked about maybe here somewhere else, you know, in the meantime is a phrase I like to use. And the reason they call it the meantime is because it's mean. And it just keeps coming, and you have to wait, and you have to wait, and you have to wait. And it seems like nothing's ever going to happen. And the temptation to jump in and fix it somehow, which never really fixes it long term, is pretty hard. You know, it's just hard to hold on and wait for him. But he says, wait patiently. Then he keeps going the same context in verse 9. He says, do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. My brethren, take the prophets. He says, now think about the prophets. And they all, at this point, there is no New Testament. He's writing, you know, James is writing here, so this is going to become the New Testament. But these people had studied, Hebrew people especially, Jewish people, had studied the Old Testament. They knew the stories of the prophets. They knew how long it took. And these people, some of them lived hundreds of years back in the day. And so when they waited on something, it took forever, it seemed. So at least we don't live, you know, at least we're going to die soon. You don't have to wait forever. And that's one of the consolations of dying at, you know, 70, 80, 90 years of age. You know, I'll be here 900 years married to that person if that's your challenge. Can you imagine celebrating your 800th wedding anniversary? Man, I'd love it, but I know people that wouldn't. All right, so he says, my brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Now, let me just talk about these two categories, about suffering and about patience. The reason we don't suffer more than we do is we're not patient enough to suffer. And one of the reasons that we get into a lot of trouble is we usurp the suffering with something to fix it. And this category, I keep using this, and you say, well, it doesn't apply to me. It applies to lots of people that I talk to. Somebody says, well, I've kept myself, or I'm waiting till I get married. I'm trying to be pure. But, you know, everybody else around me is having a good time, and they've got intimacy or sex or one-night stand. They just get away with it. Nothing seems to happen to them. I'm tired of waiting. I'm tired of suffering. I'm tired of being lonely and alone. I'm going to fix this. I'm tired of being patient. God has not brought me this person, and everybody else seems to be having a big time doing it the wrong way. I'm done. So you stop being patient and you jump in the game to eliminate your suffering. And unfortunately, I end up sitting down with these people that have played the game that way, and it's just compounded their suffering. It's just made it worse. So this combination here, he says, look at these prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. You know, this is not the popular stuff. You can't raise a lot of money in churches with, you know, sermons about suffering. But the fact of the matter is, you're going to suffer. People get sick. People die. Some people get healed, but you know what? Even Lazarus, Jesus' friend Lazarus, saying, wow, this is so great. Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, but you know what? Lazarus died. And in some ways, Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead made his life hell. Because from then on, the Jews tried to kill Lazarus because Lazarus was a symbol of the miracle of Jesus. Everybody wanted to see Lazarus, meet Lazarus. He was like the guy. The Jewish people, though, started hating Lazarus almost as much as they hated Jesus. And so he had like a death threat all the time on his life. So even the miraculous stuff sometimes can bring some pain. Example of suffering and patience. And then he says this phrase, indeed, we count them blessed who endure. Now, do you really? And do we really? Can you think of people who have done the right thing, who have suffered patiently, lived their lives the right way? And when you look at them at the end of their life, maybe they didn't die rich. Maybe they didn't die with the most toys. Maybe whatever you think is successful. But you think about their life and you say, you know what? The ones that endured, we do count them blessed. Now, I'd like you to think a minute of somebody in your life, maybe they're already dead and gone, who endured till the end. They made it till the end, and you go, wow, that is a blessed person. Anybody got anybody in mind like that? How many of you have got somebody in your family you're thinking of like that? All right, what steps are you taking, if you know somebody like that, to live and die that way? Do you have the moxie? Do you have the stick-to-itiveness? Do you have the determination, the perseverance, whatever it is, to say, Father, I'm going to wait patiently. I know this is a very long trip. I'm going to hang in there. I don't care what comes or goes. I'm going to learn to be content, and I am going to hit the finish line trusting you no matter what. Now, see, you have these examples. The Bible uses these great cloud of witnesses, a term like that. People have gone before us. We think of the prophets, but we got people in our own families. You say, well, they finished that way. How did they do that? And how are you going to do that? And do you even have a desire to do that? I think it was Spike Lee that said, I'm not Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King had a dream. I've got a plan. What is your plan? Because if you don't have a plan, you don't have a purpose, you don't have something in sight, a goal in sight, then when you get to these forks in the road, and the wide way goes left, the right way is a narrow road, you say, well, I think I'm going the easy way. You say, no, that's not the plan. I am going to finish this race strong, even if it means suffering. And if the right way is a suffering way, I'll go that way and be patient. Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. And then he goes on and he gives a specific example. And I'm going to go over and read you some about this. He said, you have heard of the perseverance of Job, the patience of Job, and seeing the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. Now, I think it's fascinating in the book of James, when Job is mentioned, you would think that what would be mentioned was his suffering. But what is he talking about when he talks about Job? His patience, his perseverance, the fact that through it all, the tragedy in his life, losing all of his kids except for his wife, losing all of his possessions, basically physically covered from head to toe with boils, and he says, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. You know, how are we going to take something good from his hand and not let something bad happen? So he takes all that. Then his three buddies who show up trying to be nice. You know, the whole book of Job is a bunch of guys trying to say stuff they don't know what they're talking about. And he puts up with that and patiently endures however long all that took and comes out on the other side. Now, here is some motivation for not quitting. You don't know where the end of the suffering is. God would not allow what's happening to you to happen. Now, if you've brought something on yourself, and that was the contention of Job's three buddies, that you've done something to bring this on you. Okay, there's consequence to stuff. Still be patient and endure that and say, okay, God, I got myself into this. You're going to have to get me through it, but I'm going to trust you. But if God just singles you out and says, you know what? I'm going to allow this. I'm going to allow the enemy to attack you, your family, your health, whatever it is, but hang in there because I am going to do something at the end of this. And what is the point of his statement here? See the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. Part of what motivates us to keep trusting and keep moving is that we know who he is. He is very compassionate and he's very merciful, and that there's going to be an end game to this and it is going to be worth it. Now, it may be seeing Jesus that makes it worth it all, but I think there are plenty of times in life when if we had just held on, when if we just had hung in there a little bit longer, God would have said, now see, that's what I was trying to accomplish. the people that you thought of or cited earlier when I said think of somebody, they probably had some troubles, didn't they? It's not like people don't have troubles, but people of great character who turn out to be blessed and amazing examples of this stuff have gone through some unbelievable hardship. And part of the reason you respect them and admire them and look to them is you go, look what they made it through. If they can do it, so can I. But they got to go through the thing and come out on the other side. And that's what happens here to Job. Now, let me go to Job chapter 42. And if you want to go read the whole book of Job to see what happened, that's fine. But let's jump in at Job 42, verse 10 and following. And I may make some additional comments here that don't pertain to what we're talking about today, but I think they're important. Verse 10, and the Lord restored Job's losses. Do you know when God restored everything to Job and more? Do you know what triggered the restoration? Listen to this. And the Lord restored Job's losses when he prayed for his friends. That's what triggered it. Now, you say, well, I got people in my life and they're in my business and they're telling me this and that and I've got enough problems it is and they're wagging their fingers at me and Job's had these three guys going at him, all this conversation, banter back and forth, and they're accusing him of stuff. But when it all was said and done, when Job prayed for his three friends, then it all turned around. Now, who have you got in your life? You've suffered. You've been accused of all kind of stuff. If your situation, the changing, the turning around of your situation was going to be determined by your willingness to pray for some people in your life, and you say, well, I'm not praying for those people, could that be holding you up? Are you willing? I'm sure you got some of these people on the brain. Now, if you lock up and say, well, I'm not praying for those people, that could be the key to everything changing. Forgiving somebody. I didn't promise you this would be encouraging. And the Lord restored Job's losses when he prayed for his friends. Indeed, the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. Then all his brothers, all his sisters, and all those who had been his acquaintances before came to him and ate food with him in his house, and they consoled him and comforted him for all the adversity that the Lord had brought upon him. And I think it's interesting that they even know, and it says it right there, all the adversity that the Lord had brought upon him. Now, whether you like the sound of this or not, some of the stuff that you're getting hit with is ordained, not just allowed, but put there by God himself. You say, well, I don't like it. You better get to the place where you can say, in everything, give thanks. You say, Father, I can't change this. If I brought it on myself, that's one thing. But if you're doing this to me for some reason, then I am not wasting this pain. I want to know what this is about and what it is you're trying to teach me. I see a lot of people think, well, just bad things happen to good people or whatever. You know what? God is still God, and whether you understand it or not, there are certain things. Coaches will do it to athletes. The coach will say, okay, everybody run laps. And then out of nowhere, he'll say, okay, everybody run another 2 miles. He's like, what are you talking about? Why would a coach be mean to a bunch of kids who are exhausted anyway? He's trying to move them. He's trying to challenge them. He's trying to stretch them somehow. And you say, well, I don't like that. You know what? He didn't ask us what we thought. He is our Father. He knows what we need, and he knows what we can take, and he's not going to hit you with more than you can take with him. If you try to do it by yourself, you're toast. And he may allow it to stay there until you come back and say uncle, so you can say father and get on with it. I can think of stuff that's happened in my life. I brought plenty of stuff on me, but there's some stuff I have no idea why it's there except that God has put it there. And until I passed the test, it didn't lift. And when I finally would pass the test and he had accomplished what he was trying to accomplish in my life, boom, it was like it was gone. I'm like, why didn't I resolve this months or years ago? If God comes along and he is squeezing you, he is pushing you in a way, and you say, well, I don't like this and you can't do this to me, and you're complaining and griping and upset about it. If you ever just stop to think, you know, what if I just yield to what he's trying to do in my life, maybe this would lift. And I'm telling you, there are times it will lift. And you are extending your pain way farther than it's supposed to be going at times. Because you just are stubborn, bullheaded, all those synonyms that I'm sure you can come up with on your own. His brothers and sisters come over, comfort him for the adversity the Lord had brought upon him. Each one gave him a piece of silver and each a ring of gold. And I'm not guaranteeing this for you, but it's fascinating that things turned around so much that his own family and friends just started bringing him stuff because they knew what he had been through and just wanted to bless him. Verse 12. Now the Lord blessed the latter days of Job more than his beginning. Now, I can think from this point back in my life of ways God has blessed me. And if God came along and said, look, I'm going to hit you with adversity. And by the way, I don't go around being afraid of this or cringing, but adversity can come out of nowhere. And you better be prepared. A buddy of mine who's dead and gone now used to say, you can't cram for a crisis. And when it hits you, you better be walking and talking with God. The reason Job survived is that he didn't have to ramp up to anything. He was already walking with God and trusting God. The reason why adversity knocks so many people on their butt is they're not taking a stand before they get hit. They're not prepared for whatever's coming, so it knocks them down. Now they don't just have the problem. They got to get up from the problem and then figure out how they're going to move forward. So walk with him, talk with him, and be prepared. And I think of these things that have happened to me, and if God hit me with something out of nowhere, which I'm not praying for or hoping for, but if he hits me with something, it is possible, and I don't know how this is possible, but it is possible that the end, as good as the beginning it was, sometimes, in this case, especially Job, the end was even better than the beginning. And I think if I went around the room, we got plenty of people with examples of that. Huge heartache. They survive it. They come out on the side and it's like, wow, they're completely different people. They would not even be who they are if they hadn't survived the adversity that they have and lived through it and walked through it and made it through it. Now, verse 12, and let me keep going here. Now, the Lord blessed the latter days of Job more than his beginning, for he had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 female donkeys. He also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. Verse 14 says, and he called the name of the first Jemima. The first child born after all of his kids had been lost everything, he had a little girl. Now think about it. He's lost all his kids, and now his wife's pregnant, and here comes a little girl. And what did they name her? Jemima. You know what Jemima means? Day by day. We're going to take this one day at a time. And that little girl was going to be the constant reminder. Just named her day by day, because that's all you get. Sufficient for the day are the evils thereof, the book says. The name of the second was Keziah. The name of the third, Karin Hapuk. Well, she loved that one, I'm sure. In all the land were found no women so beautiful as the daughters of Job, and their father gave them an inheritance among their brothers, which usually the guys would get everything. But in this case, Job says, everybody's going to get something. And then verse 16, after this, Job lived 140 years and saw his children and grandchildren and 4 generations. Kids having kids having kids. So he died old and full of days.
Before Richard comes back to wrap things up for us today, I'd like to share a couple important things with you. Let me encourage you to take a minute and check out our website, richardellistalks.com. You'll find today's talk right there in the talks page, along with all of Richard's messages. You can even forward them to a friend so they can hear them too. You'll also find the prayer wall to add your prayer requests, a link to connect with us, the contribute page for you to be able to give to this ministry, a radio station finder, all our social media links, and much more. So check it out, richardellistalks.com. And Richard's back now to wrap up today's talk.
Now see, if you're on the front side of adversity, you say, well, sure, I'm sure I'll be okay. It'll be all right. I've seen other people do it. I'm sure I'll just trust God and move through it. When you're in the middle of adversity, talking ain't so easy. And pat answers don't work because you're fighting it. But if you get through it and you get to the other side of it where you can look back on it and you say, you know what? Wow. Look what God did. I would not be who I am without that. Take the average. Look back over your life. Consider the prophets. Consider Job. Consider your mom, your dad, your grandparents, whoever it is you think about and say, okay, now how did they do that? And did they get fast, easy answers? Not necessarily. They were patient. There was suffering. There was perseverance. And they kept moving. And it's doing the right thing a long way in the same direction. And it's day by day, day after day, hoeing your row. You say, well, I'm tired. You know what? I get tired too. But don't grow weary in well-doing because it'll pay off. And any of these little fast tricks to fix it, the devil comes along with and says, well, let's go the shortcut. There are no shortcuts except obedience. You might shorten the process a little bit if you just choose to obey.
This has been Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. There's only one reason we do this program, to take the planet with the good news of Jesus Christ. That's our message and our mission. And you have a vital part of doing that along with us. If you've been encouraged by these talks with Richard, be sure to share with someone about the change they've made in your life. And we'd love to hear your story as to how the talks have made a difference to you. Give us a call. We'd love to talk with you. 855-6-RICHARD. You can also reach us through our website, richardellistalks.com. And while you're there, check out all the fun and informative pages we put together for you, richardellistalks.com. While you're there, be sure to click on the Contribute tab at the top to send your generous gift. If the program is making a difference to you, your gift will make a big difference to us. Until next time, thanks so much for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.